Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The trade war is real. Stocks sell off with the latest round of tit-for-tat tariffs. Select retailers surge, and our guest today is Chris Gessel, from Investors Business Daily. All this and much more on episode number 625 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Good day to you. This is Andrew Horowitz, and I am the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks for joining me so much on this Sunday, this weekend, and each and every week throughout the year. This is now episode number 625. Been doing this for, I guess it's close to 11 or 12 years right now. One of the longest running financial podcasts out there. We kind of started the whole genre in a way when I wrote my first book, The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, by the way, available on audiobooks. You can go over to Audible or Amazon and grab that audiobook. But I'll tell you a quick story for those of you that don't know. How did this podcast start? I mean, where did this all come from? So what happened back then was that I was in the process of writing this book, right? And at the time, my editor and a few people said, hey, you know what? Why don't you start looking into podcasts? It's a great way to promote a book. And I said, forgive me, but what is a podcast? That's what I said. Like, well, you know, it's the publisher said, well, it's, you know, this thing where you can talk and bring on either people or talk about what's going on in your book, kind of a promotional way of doing it. I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Well, how does it exactly work? Well, you just get a microphone, you get something to record it on. Throw it up at that time on Apple iTunes. I'm like, oh, I heard of iTunes. Yeah, okay. And, you know, from there you set up these RSS feeds and all this. I'm like, oh, okay, slow down. So they explained it all to me and I figured it out and we started doing this thing. And back then it was quick 20-minute discussions about what was just generally happening. There was some contest that I was tracking and trading things that were going on when I was involved with the MSN money. There was this kind of this contest they had, this trading competition, and I was tracking that I was involved with, and all this was going on, and here we are today. And what has happened to podcasting over that time is nothing but incredible. Besides the fact that everybody and their brother and sister and mother and father and grandfather and uncle and aunt have a podcast, okay, it is a great medium to really disseminate information for a lot of people, because it's really democratized the whole idea of getting your voice out there in a way that is really good. Now, there's a lot of really good podcasts out there, really great content, and equally as many really bad podcasts that just people feel that they can just get on in front of a microphone, turn it on, and voila. Hopefully, we're in the first class where there is a good amount of information and we do have a great guest available today as well. And we have over the next 2 or 3 weeks lined up some great guests as well to bring us some of the greatest information and insights into markets, into finance, into the whole area of money that's out there. So anyway, a little insight on how this whole thing started. Thank you so much for many of you. I get calls. This is true. I get calls from people that say to me, hey, Andrew, I've listened to you since show number one. And they talk to me about what's going on in their lives and they tell me what's happening. I really appreciate that. And of course, you can give me your comments at any given time, your questions over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com by going to Ask Andrew, little button on the top there, and simply clicking that button and putting in what you want to tell me about. If you want to find out more about what we're doing, if you want to see more about what's happening with the investment styles, how we manage our investments, because that's what we do. We fundamentally, what's it we do day in and day out, aside from podcasting and bringing you all this on DH Unplugged each and every week and writing some things and doing research. Well, of course, we manage money. That's what we do. That's what Horowitz & Company is all about. Been that way since 1980, we'll call it 1990, round number. But let's fast forward. Let's bring it back. Let's kind of bring the whole discussion to where we are today. And where we are today is, I guess the best we could say is, it's a psychotic market. It's pretty crazy what's happening on a daily and weekly basis. Frankly, it's nuts. We're seeing these daily bouts of glee, happiness, excitement, euphoria that break down to despair in a matter of sometimes seconds, but in a matter of a day or so. This buy-in, oh my God, I'm freaking out, sell out concept has been really, I think that's really been what's been going on in the markets, because people are so concerned and to a point I believe have lost confidence. And really, when you think about stock markets, investing, you think about this whole idea of what holds all of this up? What's the essence of investing? Why do stocks move up in value? It's all about one thing. It's the idea that we have confidence in something currently and in the future. And when we have that confidence, we feel like, yeah, we could buy stocks. We could feel good about the opportunity and prospect for a company, or maybe the stock market in total, or the oil market or bonds, whatever it may be. We have confidence that there is going to be an opportunity for me to either make or secure my money into the future. And that confidence leads us to do things. Whether it's from an economic standpoint where I say, you know what, I'm feeling really good about my job. I'm feeling really good about the prospects of what's going on into the future. I'm going to buy that piece of property. I'm going to buy that computer. I'm going to buy that wardrobe. Because I feel that now and into the future, my money is secure. My job is secure. And I'm not going to have any problems. When that confidence turns around and all of a sudden, whether it's because you lost your job, whether it's because all of a sudden your business isn't doing as well, or maybe it's because what you see out there, whether it's your neighbor, whether it's just on television, you see something that's going on that breaks your confidence. What happens? You pull back. You say, I'm not really interested in maybe spending that money right now. You look at a company that comes out with maybe poor earnings and an outlook that's questionable, you lose confidence. And that confidence across the board when it comes to the economy and the stock markets are we know what holds things up. So when that confidence breaks, that's what goes down. So on Friday when we saw, again, just one day in the entire view of what's happening with this tariff and trade war situation with China, when we saw that at 8:02 in the morning, that China says, hey, you know what? We're going to come back and retaliate against the tariffs that you're putting on us from September 1st and December 15th. And we're going to put $75 billion worth of goods on tariff alert for September 1st and December 15th. And then we see that President Trump comes out and says, I order U.S. companies to look for other alternatives to doing business in China. And essentially saying that he wants American companies to pull out of working with China. And then further discuss that, you know what, we're going to announce something at the end of the day as well. And everybody's like, wait a minute, what else are you announcing here? The only thing could be an increase in the tariffs to show China that he means business. And what do you get? You get a stock market that drops 600 points on the Dow. The NASDAQ's down 3%. You see that the small caps are down 2.79 or 8%, close to 3%. You see more than 2% drop on the S&P 500 because confidence was lost. Confidence that there'll be an easy end to this trade war. That, yeah, trade wars are easy to win. and that China is going to buckle under the first round of tariffs that were put on about 18 months ago. And that now here we are in the real, in the real fact that we are in a trade war that is going to probably be extended, if nothing else, until the election, where China will try to wait it out, hoping that the U.S. economy buckles and therefore voters will say, oh, this didn't work out so well. Let's bring somebody else in. And hopefully that other candidate will be a lot friendlier to China. They, I think, really are going to do that. I think they're going to wait this out. Now, whether or not you agree with the fact that we should be doing something about all the various trading inefficiencies and problems we have with China, and on top of that, they're stealing the intellectual property, all the things that go along with why we're trying to really attack this country, is, put that aside. It's not the point. The point is the way we're going about this has become a problem. We have become a bully pushing China, and China saying, we're not going to take that crap, and pushing back. And that can be clearly seen in what happened on Friday. And the fact that the U.S. is not going to back down and just not only throw on more heat, but throw it on 2 times, 3 times, 5 times the amount at every turn. And here we are. So the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, the Dow Jones, small caps, all below their 50-day moving average now. Yeah, we bounced off some really good volume-based support on the daily timeframes, and we're holding above a critical 10-month moving average. So that's good. But now we're seeing that most indices are down about 6% from their all-time highs. Small caps are surging, are lagging. Bonds are surging. And you look at TLT, which is the long bond ETF. It's up 20% this year. And then we have something else going on. We have the fact that there are a recent report that there is more money invested in money market mutual funds or money market funds right now than ever before is telling us something. It's telling us that there's something a little bit odd in the market condition. Confidence being lost. Because if there was confidence, that money would not be in money markets or bonds, frankly. What would they be in? Well, they'd be in the stock market by individual investors. So something to consider. We'll get to more about this in a second with our guest. But just a reminder, again, any questions, comments over at Ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. You can find out more about how we manage money. I forgot about this. This is something I want to mention. Do you remember a few weeks ago I talked about how we had a significant change in the allocation of the TDI managed growth strategy? That's our long short strategy. And I mentioned how on July 31st, we came in and we looked at the rotation that we were doing for stocks, and we saw there was a significant reduction in the amount of equity exposure that our models were actually telling us that we were going to do. So we looked at this, and we cut down equity exposure on July 31st and added hedges to the portfolio significantly. And what that's done is it's kept us out of the weeds, kept us out of the problems with the recent storm when it came to the market. So the portfolio has been holding up really nicely because we really have only at this point right now, as I say this, it could change on next Tuesday. It could change at any time. But right now we have net probably about 18%, give or take, of net equity exposure on the long side. That's something to consider. If you want to check out a quick virtual tour on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, just scroll down at the site and find the link for the strategy, and there's more information there. But I want to get to the right now at the beginning of the show, our guest, because there's a lot of questions I want to ask him. I think he's going to have some insights into, and his position at IBD is very relevant in terms of getting down to the bottom line of some of the things that are going on when it comes to markets. Because if you follow Investor's Business Daily, you understand their methodology, and their methodology is one that is very, very clear, very almost absolute on how they determine what's happening with markets and what's going on. So let's take a listen and get to our discussion. I'll get right to them right now with our guest. And our guest today is Chris Cassell. He is the Chief Content Officer for Investors Business Daily, or IBD as I call it. And he's been there for a while, and he's run a lot of things. He's creative, incredible amount of the, we'll say the factors that have led to the success of IBD, like the leaderboard. And he runs a bunch of the news areas. He also leads the swing trader area. If you haven't read Investors Business Daily, on a daily basis, you can go over to their website, of course, and read all the news and all the things they have to offer there. There's also a subscription available for that. But also, on a weekly basis, I use the weekly basis as a really great tool to really, discover some things that maybe I didn't think about and understand the perspective of that. So, Chris, with that in mind, I want to welcome you to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well, and it's great to be on with you.
So let's talk a little bit about the whole idea of, the IBD way, right? Mm-hmm. There's a way. There's a process.
Oh, yeah.
So kind of let's go through that a little bit in terms of why IBD is different and kind of how you discern leading stocks and pick those stocks and leaderboard stocks and all that. Just give us a kind of a quick once over.
Well, the overall approach is we scan the market for the best stocks from a fundamental basis. And so we're looking at rates of growth, accelerating sales, accelerating earnings, return on equity, all the things that go into fundamental analysis of a company. And again, we're really focused on the growth side of the market. And so we want to see big growth in earnings and sales. Typically, the classic growth stock is going to be at 25% in the latest quarters for both earnings and sales, and hopefully it's going to be accelerating. So that means maybe it was 25% 2 quarters ago, and then the latest quarter it's 30%. So things are good and they're getting better. So once we get that pool of these fundamentally great stocks out there, then we start looking at them technically. And so we'll look at how they're outperforming the overall market, or if they are. And we have many factors to do that. But essentially what we do is first we start with good fundamentals, then we merge that with good technicals, and then that becomes the basis of our lists. And then we go and we look at them and we start analyzing the charts for low risk, high reward buy points, where it's highly likely that because they're breaking out or they're rebounding off of a moving average, that they're going to continue higher. And then all that is placed in the context of the market trend. And we really only want to be buying stocks and holding stocks when the market is in an uptrend. And when we get into a weak market, especially a bear market, we're stepping out and raising cash and letting the badness passes by, and then we'll wait for the next turnaround. And we've been doing that for decades.
One of the most interesting things is you have the IBD 50, which comes out each and every week. And mm-hmm. you obviously have all those components you just talked about wrapped up into a 50 list that is, organized by number one to number 50. Number one is, going to be strongest fundamentals and strongest technicals, all that good stuff, right?
Yeah. There's different sorts of sorting logic that goes in there. But yeah, typically number one is going to be stronger than number 50.
What's interesting about that is the most recent stock on the top, number one for a while now, has mm-hmm. been a gold stock, Kirkland Gold.
Right.
And what's interesting, I find, is that under normal, whatever normal means, but under usual and historical circumstances, probably gold stocks and, for example, maybe utilities and maybe real estate, most real estate, would not be on the top of that list, right?
Yeah, it's unusual to get a gold stock on the IBD 50, much less at the top of the IBD 50. However, it's not simply because the market was weak and therefore gold as a as an asset class is doing well. It's because Kirkland Gold, they're in the right business at the right time, and so they've got great earnings growth. They're very efficient. And plus the fact that the price of gold is rising, and then that just, you know, I guess turbocharges everything. And that's why it's hitting our screens and showing up so well and acting very well.
I mean, I got to tell you, because the reason why I was so interested in this is that I have screens for some of the strategies that we manage, and gold stocks were littered all over the place last quarter. Mm-hmm. And they were, I'm like, what are these? How are those coming up in there? And there was MLPs in there. And there was, I'm like, why years have gone on? I don't recall seeing any of that, right? It would be like a bank, a large bank, like Wells Fargo ending up on the IBD 50. I mean, what's the likelihood of that?
Highly unlikely.
Right. But can you imagine one day they show up? You're like, what's going on there? Kind of interesting. So you have this IBD 50, but you said you do this all in the context of a market cycle and a market trend. So you have something on the weekly basis and throughout the week that you, as part of the big picture, it's called the market pulse.
Right.
So the market pulse is your trend.
Yeah, we're analyzing the market day to day, and there's basically three, I guess, phases that we use. One is a confirmed uptrend. The other is uptrend under pressure, which is where we are right now. And the third is market in correction. And so we want to be aggressively buying stocks when we're in a confirmed uptrend. When we start seeing the market weaken, like we did last week with this up and down action, then we're going to change it to uptrend under pressure. And that means, well, we're not going to sell everything, but we're going to start taking some profits, cutting some losses, and be a lot more judicious about adding anything to, let's say, leaderboard or our own portfolios.
And one of the things you have from William O'Neill, from one of the several books that I've read with, of his over history, is what is it called? It's called railroad tracks, right? So we've seen those too.
Yeah, and that's when a stock that's been running very well has a big up week, and then the very next week it retraces it all. And so it's one big green bar followed by one big red bar. And usually that is a sell signal. It may not be the ultimate top, but it's definitely time to start lightening your position.
It's kind of like a blow off top in a way, but also I think the way that William O'Neill has discussed it is that is a confirmation of indecision. Because, you know, when you have a market, for example, that's moving up, then down and up, and it's kind of symmetrical in a way, there is something that's going on that's pushing it. And these days, what is it, right? It's the headlines.
Right. Well, that's the toughest part, because if you think about the correction in Q4, that was understandable. Companies started reporting earnings at the beginning of the earnings season. And early on, a lot of companies were lowering estimates for the next quarter and for 2019. And so it was really an economic slowdown that was being reflected in the earnings outlook. And so that took a number of months to kind of digest and play out. And there was also, you know, the Fed was a factor in all that as well. But it was really something more organic, where this is coming from the economy, from companies, they're seeing this in their business. And so that's why we started this correction. And it took pretty much 3 months to play itself out. Now, in the most recent correction, which started in much a similar way, where we had some really violent sell-offs and the indexes broke their 50-day or 200-day moving averages, and maybe one of those days was down 3%. And when you get a break in the market, that usually means you're going to get a 2 or 3 month intermediate correction. The issue with this one, this was started with news about the trade war with China. Well, that's really a political battle. It's not an economic battle. However, it is affecting the economy, but it could be resolved next week, next month, maybe 3 months, maybe never. We don't really know. And where it's been tough this year, and really for the last 18 months or so, where the market seems fine, companies are doing well, the earnings are coming in, and all of a sudden there's a tweet like, we're doubling the tariffs. And so now the market has to reprice that immediately. And that's what is making this market different and difficult, because it's not necessarily that evolving flow of information. It can be something that just comes out and that changes everything. And then we get these big sell-offs.
With regard to that, right now we're in an uptrend under pressure. Did we go into marketing correction at all?
Oh, yeah. We were. Let me look at the NASDAQ. So I think that I don't have the dates, but basically when it undercut the 50-day, I think just a couple days off the top that we had already put the rally under pressure. And then a couple days later, so this would have been in late July, or maybe early August, we put the market in correction. And so then it really gapped down and was, trying to right itself. Then we got this really unusual, what we call a third day follow through. So the market sold off on August 5th. And then the next 3 days, it was up, maybe not up strongly every day, but there were some big swings and the market was closing right near the top. And then on August 8th, we got a 2.2% rally in the NASDAQ, and volume was higher, or nearly higher than the day before. And so we called that a follow through day, and it looked good for a couple days, and then it started undercutting. And then we got a real follow through day on August 13th. And now, so that was when the NASDAQ was up almost 2%. Volume was definitely higher than the day before. And we were expecting that, okay, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, but it should start moving. And then that very next day, there was negative news. I think the yield curve might have inverted that day. And the stock market gapped lower and undercut the follow-through day. And so that's never a good sign when your follow-through day, when the low of the follow-through day doesn't hold and the market goes below it. That's why we changed it to rally under pressure. And so we're waiting for, the market to really show some strength and see. Right now the big issue is, can the NASDAQ and the S&P get above their 50-day moving averages? And today, once again, the market ran up to the 50-day and then reversed. So that's really the technical resistance that the market is facing right now.
And how, what do you make of, I mean, you know, obviously you're focusing on stocks primarily, so you're with the IBD methodology. So what's nice about this is that a lot of the noise and all that you really put to the side. You know, you do report the news, you guys follow the news, but you know what, if you have a system, if you have a method, this is a real good, whether it's a lesson or insight for listeners to, you know, put your plan to work and keep it working. Now, adjust it if appropriate, but try not to let outside influences in, because there's a lot of outside influences. You know, you hear, for example, money market funds have the highest amount of money in it that they've ever had before. Yield curve inversion, good or bad, I don't know. Because of Germany, because of Europe, because of quantitative easing, I don't know. The tariffs are paid by them, the tariffs are paid by us, the tariffs are going to go up, the tariffs are going to stay the same, they're going to move them to September, they're going to move them to December. I don't know what's going on there. We're going to have a capital gains cut, we're going to have a payroll tax cut. No, we're not going to have that, you know. We are going to put tariffs on Europe, on their cars, and we have an issue going on with Mexico in terms of tomatoes. So you have an incredible schizo type of market condition that is very headline driven. But at the same time, it seems to me at least that the liquidity for the stock market right now continues to be buybacks and corporate money going in, because it appears that institutions and individuals have been actually moving out of the market. Is that something that you've picked up on too?
Well, I've definitely seen those statistics. And actually, I think we just published a story the other day that buybacks have actually slowed down this year. One of the main pillars that had been really supporting the market, even when individuals or other institutions weren't bullish, was that companies were saying, my gosh, this is a great time because interest rates are so low. they would figure out, okay, I can borrow at 1%, and we believe the stock is going to rise 10% over the next year. So for them, it was a no-brainer. And now maybe they're starting to feel a little less sure of that calculation.
One of the other things you do is you blend in technical analysis. Mm-hmm. And you have a lot of patterns that you like. And there's some pattern recognition on the MarketSmith process, if you will. It's a charting and fundamental package that you guys put out. And our good friend Scott O'Neill was the, I think he spearheaded that effort. And pretty cool stuff. You can put notes on there. You can just kind of sort through a bunch of stuff. You get all your lists, whether it's a leaderboard, the IBD 50. Again, it's not a commercial for these guys, gang, but I know this stuff because I've, you know, lived and breathed it for a long time. But there's a lot of patterns. So we talked about the railroad tracks and there's things like, you know, double tops and all that. But one of the things that you're I think that people, at least that I think of, is the cup and handle. Mm-hmm. The concept of this this shallow bowl, rounded bottomish kind of thing with a kick up, then a slight move down of a handle, and then a pick back up when you get over the top of that handle part. It's obviously a buy signal if it meets certain criteria. So can you kind of walk us through a cup and handle?
Sure, absolutely. A good example is, well, maybe it's a slightly challenging example, but Microsoft, a very well-known company. It's actually become a really solid institutional, you know, large cap performer. I mean, the heyday was, you know, back in the 80s and 90s. And, you know, this stock peaked in, I guess, 2000 and didn't make a new high until 2015. Hmm. I mean, it's amazing. A stock went sideways for 15 years, but then a new CEO took over. He revitalized the company and the earnings and sales growth started picking up again. So again, going back to first, we look at the fundamentals and then we find a good fundamental story. And then we start looking for a place to enter. And the cup with handle is a great example of that. So a stock will be running up and then it needs to correct and digest its gains. And so that's where the cup starts forming. So let's say a stock is at 100 and it pulls back 15%. So now over a number of weeks, it's at 85. And now it starts coming up back near to 100, but around, let's say, 97 or so, it starts hitting resistance and it pulls back a little bit. And so if you can imagine the shape of that as it's happening over, let's say, a month or 2 months, that if you were looking at a coffee cup from the side, you would see that rounded cup shape. And then the little last shakeout would be the handle where you would pick up the coffee cup. And what we've seen is when companies make this or stocks make this pattern and then they break above the left side of the base or the handle area, and especially in big volume, that means they're more likely to continue higher. So the reason I bring up Microsoft is it created a pattern like that. Let's see, I guess that was in December and January of this year. So, you know, it was correcting in large part because the market was in a correction, and that's usually when a lot of these patterns get built. So it makes this cup with handle, and then it breaks out, and it showed some power coming out of that. And from that point, it was trading around 100, and now it's at around 137. So for a big cap to make a 37% gain over 8 months, that's a pretty good performance. And as an individual investor, you can look at these charts, and it's a lot easier with MarketSmith because we actually show you the patterns as they form. But then it gives you a really good idea, like, okay, this stock has great fundamentals and now it's going past a buy point. I should buy it now. And you'll know exactly, you know, if it closes below that buy point, well, something's not right. And so you'll start, you know, reducing your shares. But what will happen with a good stock in a good market, it should go higher. And then you can sit there and depending on what your risk tolerance is and what you think the future holds for this company. Either it's a, you know, try to go for a long-term gain, or maybe it's a shorter-term gain. It's really up to you. But that's kind of in a microcosm of how IBD looks at the market from the macro sense and the micro sense when we come to individual stocks.
I think the one thing also, I'll just mention something, if I may insert one more component to the cup and handle, is one of the other things you want to see is a reduction in volume on the handle, because you want to see that people are not just getting the hell out at all costs and leaving and it's all over and gone, because that may be either a sign of a continuation of a market correction somewhere in there where people are just dumping stocks. But you want to see where the weak hands were pretty much saying, all right, I'm done. I got my number back. I'm just going to take a little bit off the table, or maybe even, you know, take some of the position off the table. And then on the break, you also sort of want to see a continuation of higher volume, particularly on the break over either the left-hand side, but better yet, on the top of the right side of the resistance point, which would be the top of the handle, right? Is that?
Absolutely right. And actually, you bring up a really good point when you talk about the weak holders. What these patterns, we can go back to 1880, 1900, 1929. The patterns are there. They look the same. And the reason is they're a reflection of human emotion, and that, you know, human emotions don't really change. Everyone is, especially in the stock market, ruled by hope, fear, and greed. And these bases start to form because people are getting fearful either about the market or the stock itself, and they're selling shares. And then once, you know, things feel like they're turning around, then the right side of the base starts forming. And that handle is really probably a lot of people who had bought near the top, and they're so happy that they're near break even now. And so now they're selling out, and there may not be a lot of them, but there's plenty of institutions to buy up those shares as soon as they hit the market. And that is why you'll see these low volume shakeouts in a handle, and that, and once those sellers are cleared out, the next bit of news or big buyer that steps in is going to cause a breakout.
And do you take short interest into consideration on any of this stuff?
Oh yeah, especially, you know, it's funny. I used to look at short interest a lot. Then it kind of faded as being one of my things that I checked on. But especially with earnings gaps, that is something that I take a look at. And again, short interest is something that you can get on the IBD website and MarketSmith. And when you see a stock breaking out and it has big short interest, let's say 10 days of short, there are so many shorts that for them to buy back all their shares, it would be like 10 days of trading volume or 10% of the float, a very sizable amount. And that's where you get these breakaway gaps that, you know, might jump 10 or 15% in a day and then just keep going. And so we've seen a number of examples like that recently.
You know, it's funny because there's a whole cadre of people who think that short sellers are, you know, evil reincarnated, right? So it's funny because if you're a long holder, if you're a long only kind of person, and that's all you do, you're gonna buy and hold and all that. In the worst of the worst market corrections, you should thank your lucky stars that there are short positions out there, because they're the only ones that are gonna be buying back shares when the fan is being hit by Drek. And they're the ones that initially oftentimes will start the recovery process, what looks like buyers stepping in to hold the market on a stock or on a broad-based market situation, is the short sellers that are saying, you know what, it's not going to go down any, we don't think we're going to go down any further from this point. And when you see oftentimes that real big volatility towards the top of the bottoms, and what happens is that they actually are almost forced to buy in. And then as things are starting to move up off the bottom, those that were not committed at the bottom would say, uh-oh, wait a minute, maybe that was the bottom. And then they buy in. So all these longs that were hesitant because they're like, I'm not ever buying a stock in the rest of my life. I just lost, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
I'm never buying a stock again. Well, you know, now what happens is they're out of the market. So the animal spirits, the excitement, the greed factor has been totally flushed out. And to start the cycle again, it's the shorts. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And then it even, I mean, where we see it really taking off is when stocks start hitting new highs that have been heavily shorted. And in addition to maybe you and I who would be buying because it's a breakout on a good earnings report, these folks who were sure that, you know, company X, Y, and Z was never going to grow, and all of a sudden they're being proved wrong. And so now they've got to jump in the market and start covering their short position. So they're doing that by buying shares back. And so it's like gasoline on the bullish fire.
Yep, exactly. Any last comments on the state of the markets? Any concepts that maybe you can impart to our listeners as far as, let me set this up. Okay. Maybe you can help me with this. Mm-hmm. We talked about this a little bit, the whole idea that the news flow, headlines, tweet storms, fake news, whatever's going on, right? The whole idea that we're going to talk ourselves into a recession because the news cycles have seemingly caught on to this inverted yield curve, and all these news organizations that have no idea about anything have convinced themselves that this is absolutely, because somewhere, sometime, somebody wrote about this, the reason it is a signal. It is a warning flag that we're going to have a recession in 12 to 24 months or whatever they're kind of, you know, pushing these days. What can you tell people who are interested in understanding, because you can't stay away from this stuff, right? I mean, it's there, but interested in understanding, but making sure they stay grounded to something so that they don't hurt themselves.
Well, that's why I think really paying attention to the market trend and understanding is the market in an uptrend or downtrend is so essential. And I mean, there are some people, colleagues here, who really try to tune out the news and just focus on the charts themselves, which there's a lot of merit to that. But you do need to have kind of a backdrop of what the big picture is and understanding what's going on in the economy, because a normal pullback in a bull market is not a big deal. But if the sell-off is coming because there really are signs of slowdown in the economy that could turn into a recession, that's something you need to pay attention to, because that the pullback could turn into the beginning of a downdraft. And a lot of people, that's why people got hurt in 2000, because they had been over the, you know, the prior really 18 years, they had been taught that buying the dip was the way to riches. Every time the market came down to the 50-day or an individual stock, just start loading up because it's going to be going back up. And the issue was in 2000, that party was over. The amount of people who were on margin had grown to unsustainable levels. The market had just made a huge move. And so when people were buying the dip in March of 2000, they were hurt because they ended up buying on the way down and it kept going down.
I was in a conference I want to say it was California, the Del Coronado, but I'm not quite sure about that. But it was around March of 2000, right about then, because it was my birthday. It was right around there. And okay. Jim Cramer was talking and telling everybody to buy these stocks, which I'll remain nameless, because at this point, by the way, they are nameless. Okay. They're not, nobody would remember some of these stocks at this point. And talking about how, and I said, whoa, what are you talking about? I mean, this is getting a little, you know, the stock, that's the time. What my tell, you know, we have people that in history, was it Rockefeller that sold all the stocks when the shoeshine boy said, hey, buy stocks. Remember that? I think it's either Rockefeller or it was somebody out there. Anyway, when I get people, when I'm out with my friends, and I've had this happen twice, that start surrounding me and asking me questions about these stocks or about these sectors, or I had it in 2000. Where yep. People were asking me these crazy, you know, what do you think of Netscape? It's up, you know, 40% today. I'm like, or what do you think of this one or that one? Or back in 2006 about everybody like, hey, let's get together, pool our money and do some real estate deals. I'm like, you know, so right. That's kind of my tell when I get the crowds forming around me and all my friends who are usually not involved in constant business discussions or stock market investing, when they start coming at me. That's always a sign. But anyway, Chris Gessel. Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I completely agree with you because I had the same experiences in 2000 and 2006, and I'd be walking around the neighborhood, and people who really weren't that financially savvy were telling me how they started day trading in 2000. And in 2006, there were, you know, a number of people in the neighborhood starting, you know, building their real estate empires. And both times it's like, boy, when everyone starts getting involved in the market, that's about the time you need to get out.
I'll tell you, just a follow-up to that, the most recent time that happened, I was getting my car after a dinner. Valet guy is there, both standing there, two guys standing at the stand. I gave him my card and they're doing, I'm saying, what are you guys doing? Oh, we're trading Bitcoin. I'm like, oh.
You're right.
I said, oh, okay, I get that. I'm going to go home and sell everything I have in that area. You know? So anyway, Chris Gessel, the Chief Content Officer for Investors Business Daily. I want to thank you for joining us. And of course, it wouldn't be good if I didn't mention that you have the most soothing and almost hypnotic voice of anybody that's ever been on the show in the last 10 years.
All right.
I could talk to you for hours. I'm just so, I feel very relaxed.
That's good to know.
You've heard that before though, right?
Not quite so, but I'm happy to hear it.
Yeah. Well, very good. I appreciate your time. Let's get together soon.
Absolutely. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Tell me I'm wrong. I'm feeling so relaxed right now. His voice, I thought his voice was very relaxing. I feel very calm right now. You can tell me I'm nuts if you want. Tell me on Twitter. Andrew Horowitz is the way to get to me on Twitter. One word, just my first and last name. And that is the way to get there. So make sure to follow me and tell me if you think I'm absolutely crazy. Or maybe you also, unless you haven't fallen asleep yet. But you also thought it was the same. I want to mention that we did get some questions in here, and I do want to get to those really quickly. We have one from Matt Taylor, and he says, "Hey, what, if anything, are the safety plays in the coming downturn? What is the right amount of talk from the Fed? What is the emerging markets in 2019 line that the consultants are spewing now?" Well, there's a lot of things that you're asking me about there, Matt. But let's get to kind of the first one, I think, is what, if anything, are the safety plays in the coming downturn? Assuming there is a downturn coming, it's going to be seen that it's playing out pretty well with alternative assets, and there's some really good alternative asset mutual funds out there. We use some of those for our portfolios, both on the Investology side as well as the global allocations portfolio positioning. But aside from that, you have bonds. You can see clearly those are doing really well. And I would go short-term versus long-term. That's where I think is a better level of potential risk-reward trade-off. You also have gold and precious metals, possibly some commodities, hard assets overall, inclusive of potentially softs as well, maybe the ags. But that is a little bit more questionable when you look at that in terms of the alternatives. I mean, if you're looking for absolute safety, I mean, you know what the answer is, right? You don't want to be in the markets if that's what you want to do. If you're really concerned about that and concerned about this downturn, you know, I always talk about, depending on how severe your bunker mentality is and how much you really believe that there's going to be a catastrophic economic condition that is going to fall on us in the next however long, depends on how deep you want to dig that bunker. And if, in fact, you want to be in that bunker to begin with. Now, your question about what is the right amount of talk from the Fed, I would limit it to one concise voice at a monthly meeting. We don't need to hear all the different commentary from all the different Fed speakers that are only trying to move the markets or to sway us or, even worse, to send up trial balloons. I think that methodology that they've installed back in the days of Bernanke have done more harm than good. Now, there's been some good done by the fact, if you just simply look at market conditions and how markets react and expectations based on Fed talk. But I think the problem is they risk the destruction of their confidence by having so many voices saying so many things and not one uniform and concise discussion of where they are, and hearing the same thing over and over and over again really only juices the algos. I don't think anybody these days are really concerned about one Fed speaker saying, you know, we believe that we should be looking at lower rates, or somebody else saying higher rates, and reacting to that immediately. And lastly, your question about emerging markets in 2019. I am not sure exactly what you're talking about. I assume it's going to be the same things that we've seen before, whether it's the frontier or the emerging nations around the world, Latin America, some areas in Asia, and some areas in emerging Europe, that there's the idea that there is a significant disparity between the pricing and valuations of their markets compared to where our markets are. And therefore, the idea of a rotation, or even looking at a level of reversionary trade back into those markets, may be ideal if we believe that the developed markets are overvalued that significantly. The problem comes in is that it really takes until the end of the downturn to see that correlation break, where you may see the risk assets starting to gain favor again, if this ever comes to play. And when it comes to play, where emerging markets will start getting more money flows. Because as you're going through it, while you may see a little bit of concern with regard to the developed markets, they usually play out even further in the emerging. So you have to get to the other side after the downturn. So, Matt, thanks for your question there. We have a question of... Jack wrote me, Jack Klein. He says, can you recap and summarize your thoughts on how the Fed rate cut, China tariffs, and China currency devaluation now may be interconnected, and what might mean for the markets going forward? I think, Jack, you're seeing this play out pretty well right now. What you're seeing is that the very significant correlation between the increases in tariffs, the devaluation of the yuan, hoping by China that there will be this offsetting of the cost of what's happening with regard to how the tariffs will be increased and then the currency down, so therefore maybe they won't get hit as hard. And I believe that China will continue devaluing their currency, and why not? It's one of the tools they have in their toolkits to keep their economy going pretty strong. We may not like it because it makes their products much more... cheaper. And as they are cheaper, it makes us flow money more into that area, even though these tariffs are higher. And we saw on Friday with the retaliatory comments and then the follow through on the tariffs by increasing by the U.S. on China after the close of the markets on Friday, that the yuan dropped in value significantly, another 2%. So even though the Fed rate cut didn't necessarily drop the dollar down, I think what's happening is this thought that a safety trade into the U.S. dollar and the tariff offset by China is really screwing around with the currencies. In fact, when we look at a lot of the things that are going on in the markets and how they're interconnected, how the negative interest rates in Europe, as we talked about at length last week. If you haven't listened to that podcast, you need to get on that one. Episode number 624 was a real winner, I thought. But now here we are with this dropping of rates into negative territory that's affecting our bonds here, the tariffs on China that's affecting the currency, that's affecting the rest of the world. It's pushing out and bulging into all sorts of areas. Governments operating in this kind of manner is like a gorilla, trying to work on a very small object. It gets a little tough. And as we see this massive power getting involved in markets with essentially unlimited amounts of money and no care about how much debt they're building up these days, it's really starting to push and bulge and squeeze various areas. You know, some people call it bubbles, which there are those going on. And you have to look at how this all works. And yes, it's very simple. It's all connected. The problem is, will it resolve very nicely, or is something going to pop? That's the big question. And it seems to me that there's too much going on and too much too many oddities in the market right now, in the marketplace, in the global economy, that should have us all scratching our head, at least being on warning and on guard for what if? How does this play out? How does this get better? And for the most part, I don't see anybody providing any answers on how this is going to work out long term, how it's going to resolve, how you're going to undo what's been done. So great question. I think you're right on with your comment, and I think what you were trying to get to and ask me about. So Jack, thanks so much. Bottom line is that there is a great deal of uncertainty in the markets. Confidence, as we talked about at the top of the show, is in question right now. Confidence that governments will be able to resolve this stuff amicably in terms of the trade war, resolve the negative interest rates. I don't know how that's going to happen. I don't think anybody knows how it's going to happen. I don't think central banks have any clue on how they're going to back out of all this. And confidence is being broken. And I got to tell you, once that confidence pops, a lot of things go with it. So let's be on the alert. Let's be on the lookout. And at the same time, let's have some realization and some clarity. A lot of things that are going on are not normal. We are not in a normal market condition, and therefore realize we're not going to see normal outcomes. Take it for what it's worth. Anyway, I want to thank you for joining me. I'm going to wrap it up this show. Questions, of course, can be sent to me. Great guest coming on. Follow me on Twitter. Check out the strategies. And I'm going to see you next week. Thanks for joining me. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.